Brianna Birschbach covers politics and policy for MinnPost. She's with us this morning to talk about her article, With an Eye Towards His Legacy, Dayton Digs In on the Budget. Brianna, thanks for being with us. Is it true? Are you not getting as much sleep as you should?
I've gotten some. I got home about 9 o'clock last night and heading back in after our chat. But this isn't even the bad part. I think if they don't get a deal in the next day or two, it's going to mean a very long weekend and then some late hours trying to put some of these bills together.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, I want to talk about that, but I also want to talk kind of the past and how Governor Dayton has been in terms of budget, because he's now towards the end of his political career and maybe has some different goals. When he first started as governor, what were his goals?
Yeah, well, when he first started, it was kind of a mess. He was elected in 2010. Despite a pretty big Tea Party wave, he was elected governor in a very close race and walked into the legislative session with a $6 billion budget deficit, which I think was daunting for everybody. There hadn't been a budget deficit like that in years, and he was facing, like he is today, an all-Republican-controlled legislature. And that was the first time Republicans had ever controlled, at least in modern-day politics, had ever controlled both chambers. So they had a lot of really big goals, a lot of things they had wanted to do for decades and couldn't get done, trimming back state government spending. So Dayton's first session was really about sort of figuring out what to do with this mess, this huge deficit caused by years of pretty big tax cuts and the recession. So he didn't really have a big list of accomplishments. He came into the campaign trail wanting to raise income taxes on the wealthiest Minnesotans. It's what he promised on the campaign trail. He tried to convince Republicans to accept that as part of a deal to close this huge deficit, but that didn't happen. They wouldn't bite on it all session. What ultimately happened was a lot of shifts and movements of money around that helped patch up the hole, and a lot of government cutbacks, which I think nobody was really happy with ultimately in the end. But they had to end what ultimately became a 20-day government shutdown. So that was his first year. I don't think he thought of it as a really great start. But then a few years later, he had an all-Democratic-controlled legislature, which was just a huge shift. And they had a little bit less of a deficit, or quite a bit less of a deficit, but still a deficit to fill. He was able to then raise the income tax on wealthiest Minnesotans, which was his campaign promise, and other taxes. They raised $2 billion worth of taxes during that budget year. That was a huge priority for him to get done. And once he got that done, he started to shift his focus quite a bit more. You saw him focusing a lot on early education. That's been kind of his focus in the last few budgets. In particular, he helped pass all-day kindergarten across the state. That was a huge priority for him. And then he shifted to also want to pass all-day preschool and pre-kindergarten education for four-year-olds across the state. The first one he got done. The second one has been a little bit harder to convince legislators to accept. 2 years later, Republicans took control of the legislature. They didn't like that plan. They ultimately allowed some money to go into it, really to start this program off, about several thousand school districts or several thousand students across the state are able to get pre-kindergarten, but he wants to see more funding in it this year. That's really a big part of, I think, his legacy. He would like to see there be more, I think, education options for young kids across the state, and also more options for families with low incomes to have a place for their kids to go to learn and instead of having to spend so much money on daycare, which he's also been trying to push daycare credits as well in the tax bill. But really, this early education piece is huge for him. It's been part of the last few budget debates. It's really going to be part of this one. And also water quality is really, I think, a big part of his legacy. No other governors really worked on it or really looked into the issue as much. And he wants to, he passed with Republicans some start off buffer laws, which are very, I think, controversial in certain parts of the state, that require grassland buffers between waterways and farmland. This year, Republicans want to delay some of the deadlines on that, and he's putting his foot down. He said, this is something I want. We agree to this. But they are rolling back some of those deadlines in the environmental budget bill, so he's really pushing back on that, too. But I think those are some really big pieces of his legacy, and he would also like to see transportation funding get passed. I think he's been pushing that for several budget years. It's gone nowhere, mostly because we're talking about a gas tax increase, and a lot of legislators don't want to do that. But I think he'd like to see something get done in this budget cycle.
We're speaking with Brianna Birschbach, who covers politics on MinnPost. So, Brianna, when he came in, there was a huge deficit. Now there's a huge surplus. What's harder?
You know, it's funny. I sometimes wonder if it doesn't matter if there's a deficit or a surplus when politics get involved. It becomes messy anyway. I do think it's a little bit easier because there is some money to work with, but it's really complicated things in the sense of what you do with that surplus. You know, when you have government spending to cut, you have to figure out what to cut. When you have money to spend, really, I think interest groups from around the state come at you and say, I would like a piece of this, I would like a piece of this, and legislators have to figure out what they're going to do. Republicans want a huge tax cut bill. They're proposing about $1 billion in tax cuts. Dayton wants a much smaller bill than that, and he wants more spending on government services. Republicans trim back government spending pretty substantially. I wouldn't say it was anything like 2012, but they want to make room for more tax cuts, more transportation spending. Dayton says, wait a second, I want more state government spending. I don't want you to sort of undo some of the programs we've put in place while I've been governor. So that's really a big tension right now. They've spent the last few days working on just transportation and healthcare in particular, or just tax cuts, excuse me, and healthcare, because he doesn't want to see deep cuts there, but they want to see big tax cuts on the other end.
So, Brianna, I was just going to ask, go back a little bit and talk about childcare and, you know, all-day preschool. I don't know what it's like in the cities. I'm sure it's not anything like it is up in rural Minnesota, but as where we live, I mean, there's really no childcare. I mean, people are staying home or not, choosing not to work, even if they have good professions, because they cannot find childcare.
Yeah, I think there are more providers in the metro area, but that's something that's really been brought up by Dayton's administration. I think Republicans push back. They're saying, you're not actually, this isn't an education proposal. This is you're just doing state-funded daycare across the state. Obviously, Dayton's administration has pushed back, saying that this is about early education and brain development, very critical stage of children's development is at that four-year-old point. But it would also provide child care in areas that are low-income, areas that are in rural Minnesota, where the network of providers is much more patchy and available. And I think he's always kind of acknowledged that that is part of it. I think the all-day kindergarten was the first step, and he would really like to see it move on to this next one. Now, he is fighting against, he wants more funding for preschool. If more schools across the state can sign up and elect to get this program, but Republicans are actually trying to defund that program and put it into school readiness, which is a little bit different. It kind of gives school districts the choice on what to do with that money. They could keep pre-K if they wanted to, but he's kind of fighting just to keep his preschool proposal alive as it is now, and hopefully, I think for him, get a little bit more funding. But the debate has kind of shifted. Republicans want to see it go away.
So, Brianna, tell us what's going on now. We talked to Representative Sandy Lehman last hour, and she was talking about the promise from the governor to veto things. Where are we at?
Well, he has vetoed all the budget bills that Republicans sent him. They kind of last week, negotiations were moving along slowly. I think Republicans said they were worried about that it was moving too slow. And they always, I think, had this plan in the back of their pocket. What if we just send him the budget bills we would like to do, see what happens, see if he vetoes them, then we can say we've gotten our work done. And it's up to him to show some movement on the negotiations. Dayton certainly says, I'm negotiating in good faith here. You decided to go nuclear. So now that part is done. Dayton has vetoed all their budget bills, and they're back at the table this week. And it's been a pretty agonizingly slow process. You know, the whole boulder, rolling the boulder up the hill visual is kind of what I think every day while we stake out these meetings. I mean, they go in and they meet for hours, they trade paper offers, and they move, you know, incrementally toward each other. That's what they were doing all day until late last night. Dayton offered to split up the surplus, this a little bit less than that now, $1.5 billion budget surplus in half, and say, I will get half for state government services and you'll get your half for transportation and tax cuts, because those are your priorities. Republicans didn't like that. I think it kind of derailed things a little bit, and we don't really know where they're going to go from here today. They said that that was a departure from what they were doing, and it wasn't actually half. So the thing is about even when you throw in a simple idea in the Capitol, like, let's split it in half, that's not even simple because now they can't agree to what the halfway point is. So it'll be really interesting to see where they go from here.
As a journalist covering this, you know, these kind of politics going on, is it exciting? Is it do you have any ideas on what might actually happen?
I don't. You know, I was optimistic all session that they would get something done on time. You know, they tried to avoid some of the mess of last two sessions, you know, passing bills late in the game, late at night, where the public can't be involved. And Republicans had bumped up deadlines and sent Dayton all these bills early, but then they decided to send them to him, and then he vetoed them, and now we're into the last 4 days of session, and we have to basically start over on the budget. So either way, you have this process that's really messy, really bad for the public, and I'm really unsure they're going to get done in time. I think they have to really make some movement today or tomorrow early on a deal, because there's logistically just a lot of time involved in drafting these 100-page budget bills. The physically have to be drafted by this office called the Reviser's Office, and they have to be delivered, and there are rules about timing on when they can be voted on. So they really have to make some headway. If they don't in the next day or two, then I think we're in trouble and possibly going into a special session.
Yeah, what exactly happens then if they don't make any decisions here?
Well, Monday night, at midnight heading into Tuesday will be the deadline. So if they don't have some kind of budget deal that Dayton can accept, session will still adjourn, or it will still have to, they'll still have to go home, and then Dayton kind of holds a lot of the cards. He can call back a special session of the legislature, so they'll probably head back into negotiations with him without lawmakers being around in committees. They'll probably strike a deal saying, this is what the bills are. Dayton will require signatures from all the caucus leaders that this is the only thing you're going to take up, because he can call a special session, but only legislators can send lawmakers home. So if he doesn't try to set strict parameters on what's going to happen in that special session, it could derail very easily, and all sorts of issues could be taken up. And it's happened before in the past. Special sessions have stretched on for weeks. Usually they're tried to handle everything in one day. So I think that would be the plan after that, and they have to figure that out before the next fiscal year, which starts July 1st. If they don't have a special session to pass a budget before then, state government will go into shutdown mode, which has happened as recently as 2011. So it's pretty fresh memories on that.
Brianna, we've been talking about this article that you wrote, with an eye toward his legacy, Dayton digs in on the budget. What do you think his legacy is going to be?
You know, I really think that this income tax increase was really big for him. It feels like a while ago now, and I think people forget about it because he's really shifted away from much to do with taxes. That was what he ran on. He was the tax the rich guy. He was the rich guy saying, I want to tax the rich. That was really what he was known for in the early days. But I think he's trying now to craft a legacy on early learners and clean water. He has been on this clean water issue ever since his commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency came to him and showed him a map of the state. They were testing waterways as part of the legacy amendment throughout the state, and he showed him a map, and he showed him southern Minnesota and how many of the waterways were unswimmable, undrinkable, and totally destroyed by runoff in that area. And I think that really shocked him, and that he went after this issue more aggressively than I've seen him go after other issues. And I think that is really important to him to at least start that conversation. He wants to get grassland buffers in throughout the state, and he wants to start improving in small towns across the state the infrastructure in their water treatment plants. A lot of aging water treatment plants around the state that could potentially cause huge problems and could damage drinking water for residents. That was a big part of his bonding proposal. I think in his last few years, he'd like to see that done. If a bonding bill is not passed this year, next year is a bonding year, so I think he's going to push for quite a few more projects in that area, as well as projects across the state. He's always been very interested in bonding bills, too. He's always proposed bonding bills that are more than $1 billion. So I think we're going to see some more of that from him as he exits the governor's office as well.
Brianna Birschbach, covering politics and policy in Minnesota at minpost.com. Brianna, thanks for talking with us. Good luck. Get some sleep.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, thanks. I'll try.
Okay. It is the Thursday morning show. Coming up, we've got a story from National Public Radio. We're going to learn how former FBI Director Robert Mueller is perceived. David Green is talking with former Secret Service Director Mark Sullivan. He worked with him during the Bush and Obama administrations.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations.